Welcome to the Global Council podcast, where we share our latest insights on recent developments in politics and policy in the UK, Europe, and worldwide.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brigida Kinadi, and I'm a Senior Associate in Global Council Singapore office. For today's podcast, we'll be discussing Indonesia's recently passed omnibus bill and key implications for foreign investment, labor reform, and also wider political issues such as Jokowi's legacy and other political considerations. The omnibus bill was passed recently on October 5th and is the most comprehensive rewrite of laws in Indonesia. So the bill itself covers 11 broad areas and revises more than 70 existing laws. It is a very crucial part of President Jokowi's agenda to create jobs and boost investment in Indonesia during his second term, especially as the Indonesian economy struggles with the impact of the pandemic. So today I'm very happy to be joined by Kevin O'Rourke, who will be discussing the omnibus bill with me in more detail. Kevin is a very well-regarded political risk expert for Indonesia. He authors a weekly newsletter called Reformasi, focusing on Indonesian politics and policymaking. He's been covering this newsletter for over 17 years now, and he has spent decades focusing and studying Indonesian politics. So welcome, Kevin, to the podcast, and very great to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks, Brigitte. Yeah, my pleasure.
So I think let's dive right into our topic, to Indonesia's omnibus bill. My first question and issue to discuss with you, Kevin, is since the passing of the omnibus bill last week, the reaction has been quite mixed. There are obviously some in Indonesia's business environment, such as the country's Chamber of Commerce and Industry, that have long advocated for the bill's passing to be accelerated and have welcomed it for resolving various issues hampering investments and also for streamlining bureaucracy in general. Labor unions and environmental groups, though, are clearly concerned about how this bill affects worker rights and also environmental protection laws. And we've seen this play out in the mass protests and strikes across Indonesia opposing the bill that has happened in the past week or so. At the same time, though, I think to a certain extent, we can say that the protests have been expected. Past administrations in Indonesia have faced similar reactions whenever trying to make adjustments to more controversial labor laws. So Kevin, in your view, what has been the general reaction in Indonesia, and what do you think we can infer from the scale and tone of the anti-omnibus bill protests so far?
There is discontent, and that was evident about a year ago as well, when there were some other economic laws that Parliament attempted to pass, and some of those were genuinely controversial or ill-considered. There's economic malaise, there's frustration with a lack of opportunities to increase living standards, and ironically, that's coming to the fore in these protests about this law, even though this omnibus law is specifically designed to address that by improving the investment climate, to bring in the capital that Indonesia needs, to generate jobs and thereby improve opportunities. The government failed to communicate that very clearly. And then there's a lot of misapprehension that this law is shifting things in a zero-sum game to the benefit of capitalists at the expense of workers. And it does indeed curb some very excessive benefits among a few unionized workers who number several million, perhaps. But it does that in order to create opportunities for a far larger number of the working age population, who number about 165 million. But these affected unions are able to mobilize demonstrations that have been quite unruly and chaotic at times and in a lot of different locations all around the country. And they're still apparently happening.
So, Kevin, I think the question, or I think some an interesting kind of looking topic to delve into more is whether you see anything different about this current round of protests compared to maybe previous protests in the past in reaction to labor reform. Do you think in general we can expect to see these protests die down fairly quickly, or do you think this could develop into a larger movement that the government should be more concerned about?
Yeah, it is important to monitor. I do expect them to subside eventually. I don't think that they should be prolonged for more than a couple of more weeks at the outset, at the utmost. However, they are a little bit different from protests and demonstrations in the past, so there's an element of uncertainty. There's no real institution or organization or establishment entity which is fueling these protests and demonstrations other than confederations of labor unions. There really is a lot of spontaneity because the participants include not just unionized workers, but also clearly youths and probably underemployed people from the informal sector. And that's why I think that it reflects just a general frustration with Indonesia's pace of development and then this year's downturn and the frustrations from the pandemic.
I think we can now maybe move on to the bill itself and focus on some of the headline changes made in key areas. Maybe if you could go over some of the main changes in labor law reform and business regulations that would have a kind of key and direct impact for foreign businesses or investors looking into Indonesia.
Well, corruption has always been the real problem in Indonesia. The legal uncertainty and unpredictability of legal system institutions is something that has bedeviled investment and has held back Indonesia. Unfortunately, the omnibus law doesn't address any of that, really. It really overlooks fundamental issues of institutional reform that Indonesia needs, such as meritocracy in the state apparatus and the civil service. However, what it aims to do is eliminate some of the unnecessary bureaucratic hurdles for permitting, and also to especially relax rigidities in the regulatory framework for the labor market. And this is something that has been problematic for nearly 20 years now, since the 2003 labor law, which provided for very strong job security for unionized workers especially, and also extremely high job loss compensation payments that employers need to make. This ranked Indonesia third highest in the world. And so the omnibus law reduces job loss compensation by 13% across the board, and in many cases by about 50%. And that's compensation that never actually reached workers anyway. It was very poorly implemented, so very few people ever actually benefited from this statutory obligation. But because it was in the statutes, it warded off potential investment and it deterred capital inflows that Indonesia needed, especially in labor-intensive manufacturing like footwear and garments. And it the omnibus law also streamlines procedures for handling, you know, workers, especially in carrying out dismissals and firings, and that makes it easier to hire people ultimately. So that those are the intentions, and so those are a couple of the center points of the law, and that should be pretty helpful actually in helping to kind of create some momentum for a better environment for investment and labor-intensive industry, and especially in certain regions where wages are still very competitive internationally, such as Central Java.
Let's now go into another topic that would be of interest for foreign investors looking into Indonesia. The omnibus bill has mandated a liberalization of foreign ownership ceilings currently imposed on many economic sectors. Unfortunately, the omnibus bill itself only changes laws, not regulations. So right now, there are no changes yet to the list of restricted or banned sectors, or what is more commonly known as the negative investment list. The Indonesian government has pledged to make changes after the bill was passed, although it remains to be seen how significant these revisions will be. Can you go over the next steps of this process on a separate presidential regulation that will further detail the economic sectors that will be opened up for private investment and also the general timeline for that?
Sure, yeah. The spirit of the law is to encourage a revision of the negative investment list on foreign ownership ceilings and to open up more sectors. The last such revision of the list was in 2016, and that one was a little bit disappointing. There have been successive revisions since 2007, and typically they tend to disappoint. The process is highly susceptible to influencing from the specific business association affected by increased foreign competition. So I'm skeptical that the Widodo administration will follow through with the dramatic revision of the list that they have promised. Instead, it may just be piecemeal. But every little bit helps. And there are some opportunities to improve efficiency through some international investment in logistics, for example, and also transportation and energy. So those are the areas to look at, I think.
For our last focus area, I wanted to talk a little bit about President Jokowi. The president sees this bill as a very important initiative to cut red tape, boost investment in Indonesia, and ultimately help transform the country to become a developed country by 2045, and also become one of the world's five biggest economies by then. So he will see this bill's passing as a major success. But at the same time, as we discussed earlier, the backlash and protests that have happened, in light of those situations, he will have to be quite careful in his handling and his response of these protests. And it would be important for him to diffuse the situation quite quickly. So I wanted to get your thoughts on why you think he decided that this was the right time to push the bill forward. Especially, you know, during a period when many Indonesians have lost their jobs and incomes due to the pandemic. What do you think were some of the political calculations behind his decision?
Sure, yeah, there's an old saying, which is that bad times make good policy in Indonesia. And that's a reflection of the fact that policymakers have appreciated the need for reform to generate future growth. And right now there's intense interest in trying to engineer a V-shaped recovery instead of a prolonged recovery. And having this law in place intends to facilitate that. It's being interpreted, unfortunately, as something that makes layoffs easier and therefore jeopardizes current job holders at a precarious time for them, when in fact I don't really see that happening, because it's more about creating opportunities and bringing in potential new investment. Incumbent investors that are already here are typically secure and solid and durable. The key that Indonesia really needs is to attract newcomers, because the manufacturing sector has been shrinking as a percentage of GDP for many years now, when in fact for an emerging market economy, it should be increasing. The problem with the demonstrations and the protests is that it may intimidate the president with regards to implementing regulations that need to come forth. The law mandates a host of these regulations to set forth detail that's needed. If the protests and demonstrations continue, then the president may be reluctant to really follow through with the final details needed to cement the impact of this law.
In light of kind of the public backlash and the protests that have happened since the bill has been passed, I think we've seen some interesting statements from parties that voted against the bill, such as the Democratic Party, and also some perhaps political rivals of Jokowi's. I think this is quite interesting for its implications for the likely candidates for the 2024 presidential race. How has political rivals of Jokowi's responded to the bill's passing? And do you see up and coming players in the 2024 presidential race trying to capitalize on the backlash against the omnibus bill?
Yes, that's been interesting because there's several governors of major provinces who are potential successors to Widodo in 2024. Opinion polls show a clear preference among voters for candidates who have experience in executive office, such as a gubernatorial post. So the three in particular are Central Java's Ganjar Pranowo, West Java's Ridwan Kamil, and Jakarta's Anies Baswedan. And what's interesting is that when the protests happened, Anies Baswedan in Jakarta took a very non-committal stance. Ridwan Kamil, in contrast, sided with the workers and demanded that the government retract the omnibus law. And Ganjar Pranowo in Central Java encouraged the protesters to learn more about it and especially encouraged the government to explain the bill, and he expressed confidence that that could resolve matters. So the three different governors have taken quite different approaches, and it's a little bit distressing to see that Ridwan Kamil has so swiftly sided with unions on this particular issue, given that the unions are really the tiny minority, but they're by far the most vocal group, when in fact, you know, it's the vastly larger number of informal sector workers who need good jobs who would benefit from this law. Until now, Kamil has been, in my mind, the foremost reformer to be in the presidential contest next time. In this case, he's dabbling in populism, I think.
Thank you, Kevin. I think that was very interesting. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, so that's all we have for today's podcast. But Kevin, I'd like to thank you again for your time and for sharing these very valuable insights on Indonesia and repercussions of the recently implemented bill.
It was a pleasure.
For more insights, blogs, and analysis, you can visit our website, www.global-council.com, and subscribe to our mailing list. And you can follow us on Twitter at global_council.